This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay. So who's going to be the leader of the...
Is Koofing the other group? Because I heard something there. I think the first thing would be to decide who lead the group.
Yeah.
And then define the actions they're taking. Anyone willing to lead the group?
I volunteer, Carlos.
I volunteer, Carlos. No, I really am here because I want to understand better and particularly understand from your concept of U.S. law what that means, because I guess that has some specific background that does not translate, obviously, to other countries, to other legislation. And the main reason I wanted to be here was what the usage is in competition and consumer protection law, the question of trust. Well, that's why I thought you would make a great chair of the super.
Well, I'm willing to leave because you flattered me so much.
I think it's very important to know this background, since we don't have Larry Strickling or Fiona. We don't have the drafters of the Constitution.
They didn't draft it.
You drafted it?
No, I thought you said the Constitution.
Well, the drafters of the affirmation of the
Union. Right. Yes. I thought you meant the Constitution.
Well, it's a come on. Any objection?
Plus one support to the
flattening.
Plus one, I support Carlos.
You know, very, very soon the plus one will make it into the dictionary, I think.
I think there is one exercise that we did yesterday that might be of help. So basically got a post-it and we grouped them and added the sub-areas. And then that might be a good exercise to see exactly what the scope of work we're doing and how we can put it together, especially to define what questions we're not asking.
That's my
prepare for takeoff.
So should we think about then how we can group these into buckets?
Okay. Buckets are themes.
What are the costs of defensive registration, and do we need to seek to reduce them in the future? Business models. You know, this was one of Jonathan's shorthand ones, and I don't necessarily recall what the meat was on this one. Does anyone recall what the concern was here? I think we can move back to Jonathan if we need to, but does anyone remember?
I think it was part of the discussion with Jamie, innovation versus business models. No,
I think it had more to do, but I could be wrong. I thought it had more to do with different business models having different safeguards built into them, so like dot bank versus, but I'm not.
That's because he has trust here. And then consumer behavior regarding trust, so I'm going to put these together. recommendations for increasing consumer trust, especially in developing countries. This also seems to be in the general bucket of trust. Sufficient data. I think that's a process. That's a process issue.
I'm sorry. Drew, can you hear Lauren? Can you hear Lauren standing from there?
It's very muffled, so I can only hear a little bit.
No, I can speak louder.
I'm sorry if there was something I was supposed to respond to. I can hear certain speakers and not others.
Can you hear me, Drew?
Yes, now I can.
Okay, I'll just speak louder. I'm sure you'll all enjoy that.
And I apologize for everyone else's eardrums.
So what we're trying to do now, Drew, is divide the themes we already identified yesterday in Margie's brainstorming exercise to try and put them into buckets so that instead of the dozen or so issues we have down here, we're trying to consolidate into smaller buckets. So that's the process we're engaged in.
Okay.
So right now we have... we have one bucket that talks about the cost of defensive registration, and then we have a trust bucket that raises several issues, increasing consumer trust, consumer behavior that demonstrates trust, business models that differentiate themselves by claiming to be more trustworthy. Here's another one that relates to trust. Can a new TLD reduce the risk of consumer confusion for a brand? Maybe that's a little different. I'm going to put that by itself for a minute. Impact of predatory pricing and defensive applications. That's going to go with our costs of defensive registration. Extent to which the public interest commitments have been consistently applied and how they have helped to promote or maintain consumer trust. So, trust, sunrise pricing and premium pricing, brand versus generic. I think that's also an IP issue with the sunrise pricing. Impact of public policy advice on safeguards on consumer protection. That's also trust that goes with our public interest commitments, I think. What is ICANN's role in engendering trust? Trust? Yeah, we have a lot. Safeguards and trust, experience from developing regions. That's also trust. So we might have a sub bullet there for focus on developing regions because that those might raise distinct issues. So we can this and then have this underneath. What is ICANN's role in engendering trust? That's going to go up here. How to bake safeguards into the new GTLD process. I think it's trust issue. Yeah, I think so too. Dispute resolution. Trust is written here too. I'm going to put that under ICANN because it's trust, but raises procedural issues. So I'm thinking that might be another bullet point. DNS abuse. I think it also raises trust issues, but maybe that's also a... I think it's procedure?
Yes, I think it's procedural.
What? How do you explain it to me?
Well, there stuff, things that you have to do to establish whether or not there's abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's procedures for mitigating abuse.
Okay.
So.
And then it always comes to how you define abuse and if the rules we're applying to DNS abuse are sufficient. Well, and
sure. Yeah. So that you have to look at it as a different
way. Yeah. Put it here for now. We'll put them next to each other.
Yeah.
Are you the author, folks?
No, no, that's fine. That's fine.
Brands and and IP protection. It's the person wrote trust, but I still think it's going to be grouped with these IP issues. So.
So we have about seven.
Then there's one more. This long one. Ways in which new GLTs might or might not affect consumer trust and confusion in the marketplace. And then there's an example. For example, are criminals preying off of the... It's written. Thank you. Thank you. That's so much easier.
We're sending a copy to Drew right now.
Oh, okay. So are criminals preying off the fact that a legacy AOD operator most likely won't So I think that's a confusion issue. A consumer trust and confusion. Unless I'm misunderstanding it. Does anyone want to speak more to this one?
Yeah, that would be a confusion issue.
Right.
The creation of ambiguities because, person or an entity, a registrant that owns a .com can't possibly buy 900 and something other of the same domain names with the new TLDs.
Okay, so we can have 4.car and 4.cars and 4.vehicle and 4
right.
may not own 4.vehicle. Instead, it could be Bob's used car lot that owns 4.vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Okay, so that would go in the trust category. So then, in terms of our buckets, our buckets are... Well, we have a
Trust bucket first.
And then as a subset, we have developing countries. And then as another subset.
IP?
Yeah. Well, IP is going to be a different bucket. So let me just get through the trust one, the developing countries. And then we have sort of these procedural.
Yeah.
Procedural. And then under that, we have ICANN's role. We have dispute resolution process, or processes, I guess, which is more than one. And sufficient data. Which I guess is an overarching concern that when we draw conclusions, do we have sufficient data to back it up? So, and DNS abuse. So that's our trust bucket. And then our other bucket really has to do with IP. Or what I'm calling IP issues, but I'm open to other names.
I think it's a good name.
Yeah?
I mean, is it IP network or internet protocol? Or
No, intellectual property.
So isn't it really RPMs,
right
protection mechanism?
Because we're not looking at copyright. We're not looking
right.
at
copyright. No, that's true. I guess that's a fair point, Jamie.
Are you considering pharmacies in that category?
What? Would we be considering pharmacies, you say?
For the IP issues, so if there's a fake pharmacy that's pretending it's selling a legitimate product that deals with intellectual property, but it also deals with other issues.
Not as a specific category, but certainly if there are issues surrounding pharmacies, yeah.
Yeah.
maybe brands issues instead, because I think you're right, Jamie, IP is too broad.
Yeah.
And that separates very well from regulated areas or the pharmacy bank, and I don't know what name do you give them now, but when the GAC advice came out, those were the regulated sectors.
Right, those are the more highly regulated sectors.
So it separates brands from regulated sectors.
Yeah, and I
from pure generic names.
Right. So under here, we could have defensive cost of defensive registration.
Shouldn't that be relative cost of defensive registrations? Because if it's just defensive registrations, that makes it sound like defensive registrations are in and of themselves a cost or a poor bad.
Yeah, that's sound relative.
So the real issue is whether they're higher or they're than they were in legacy.
Mm.
I mean, brand, in order, at least in the United States, if you want to protect, you defend a trademark, you, there are things you need to do, and those include costs that you have to incur so that your brand or trademark does not get diluted. And so that's just, and that's
given.
Accepted. Yeah, it's a given. So if, you know, it, with new GTLDs, there's a dot shoe, Nike's probably going to have to get a thing, even get a name, even if it doesn't want to just make sure that no one else does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
So what's the other one?
So relative cost under there, impact of predatory pricing.
That's a different thing. Though.
Okay. Impact of predatory pricing and defensive applications. So I took this to mean, although I could, you're saying it's different, I took this to mean predatory pricing of the defensive registrations, but maybe the person meant something else. What do you, how do you think there's, you don't think it's that, Jamie? What do you think?
It could be that. I mean, I was just thinking, I mean, there's two things. One is the writing a typical defensive registration. The person may have been thinking about TLDs like God Sucks, which is they would, you know, doesn't necessarily have anything to do with their
data strategies, renaming
the market that they're in, but they may feel held up because if they don't get it, someone else will, and they'll criticize the brand. But I didn't come up with that one, so I don't know for sure if that's what they meant.
Predatory pricing. I'm just wondering with the price, in terms of the pricing, what they would be referring to other than defensive registration.
This is defensive registrations at the second level. To avoid, yes.
Yeah.
So I have 4.com. I applied for .4.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably won't give up Ford.com.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the added cost of
developing.
And then I have to defend that nobody gets Ford Sucks.
Right. That's to me what it's getting at.
Right.
That and the Ford.sucks, at least the way it was priced, was a lot higher.
And before I had only one domain name, Ford.com, for all purposes.
But and you raised a good issue on the top level domain. I think it's something we should look at, whether there was abuse or trust issues with the protections at the top level, because their Ford did not have to necessarily apply for .Ford, because if someone else did and they planned in their business plan, they planned to use it for automobiles, they could take them down under the trademark
protection. Right.
Because John Ford, yes.
Because, I mean, Ford could be, you know...
Ford models, there's a model.
John.Ford.
Right.
And then Ford...
Gerald.Ford.
And then Gerald Ford. And then Ford wants to have a global strategy, so he goes after all two-letter domains, US.Ford, Germany.Ford, so he ends up having 210.
A portfolio.
Domain.
Portfolio. I mean, it's not always black. I mean, there were some people in the before the launch who were arguing that that you would, if you were a brand, you would have to defensively register in every single top-level domain. And trademark lawyers would say, no, that's actually not true.
Hmm.
The fact that if you're Xerox and you don't register in .bananas, your brand isn't going to be
more by
someone who's taken Xerox.bananas, and you can go after them with the UDRB or URS.
But being a global company, they want the delegation of the two-letter codes at the second level anyhow to protect their own local websites. So he's going from one into 100 related domain names. So they have to hire a domain name manager like Jordan.
Right. No, they're good, but they don't necessarily have to go in all countries, particularly if they're not.
No, in the countries, Brazil, right. Mexico, whatever, where they have their own product. In any case, they go from 1 to 20.
But that happens with any, I would argue, that would happen with
all the
brands. Any time there's a new media, new form of media, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's new magazines, new newspapers, new new websites, whatever. There's always the possibility that they're going to have to take additional actions to protect their trademark.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was trying to get it. Is there a sort of unfair burden that they face now with top-level domains or at the second level, or do the rights protection mechanisms effectively reduce or eliminate those costs?
At least we have two different type of costs, defensive registration, brands protection. Okay, that's good.
So, what I'm continuing then, we forgot confusion on our consumer trust list, so bad at that. And then the other hickeys are brand protection, that's going to go under our brands issues. Reducing the risk of confusion for a brand, and sunrise pricing, which may go under cost of defensive registrations, yes? Would that be a sub-point,
which?
Sunrise pricing? Isn't that the first dibs to get at your brand?
Yeah, but that's not necessarily defensive, right? Because it's first dibs to get at your brand, but you may actually want
that
brand.
So let's put it as a separate one. Sunrise pricing. Okay. So those are our two buckets. Are we missing anything? This is what came out of our brainstorming session, but that doesn't mean that we can't take some time now to think about whether there's other.
Trademark issues. Not every, because this really is about trademark, right? And not every trademark is a brand. I mean, when I think of brand, I think of Nestle or Nabisco or big.
It could be a little guy,
right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a brand, but it's a local store owner.
Trademark.
Yeah. If they would have costs also.
Right. We have two types of consumers, the end user, internet users, and the registrant. And I'm not sure if you need to or if you have enough internet users' concerns here. We have lots of registrants and trademarks, but not necessarily. We have risk of confusion for a brand. And then in the brainstorming, we have consumer confusion. Do we need more? End users,
well, confusion never impact.
I think that relates back to our, our charged DNS abuse discussion, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what we were, which I'm not sure really goes under procedural. I think that, to me, that's its own. That's its own bullet.
I agree.
Its own bullet or its own bucket?
It's in the trust one, but I think it's it's not a subpoint of procedural issues, although you want to know how to measure it, you want to know how to detect it, that sort of thing, but I think it's its own subpoint under trust.
I agree, and then maybe put in parentheses TBD, because we still haven't defined
what that is.
What that DNS abuse is.
FYI, hopefully the report coming out will help a lot.
Oh, good.
I mean, as I'm actually looking at the draft report right now, and I think all of this is...
So how do you define it?
That's a surprise.
That's a surprise.
You cannot share it with us right now?
Oh, that's all right. Now that he says we're in the ballpark, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the ballpark. The only reason I'm not saying anything is because we're still circulating internally, and actually that's one of the points that sort of legal is sort of... So be a little careful about, and so we're refining it, but we should know it's in the...
That's okay. Now that it's come up here, I know I'm in the ballpark. So
yeah, you're in the ballpark.
I'm good.
Carlson is reassured. So I think you raised a good point about thinking about the end user. So are there other... And maybe, Drew, you might have some thoughts here. Should there be any other end user oriented issues in our on our radar screen for this review, whether it falls under trust or whether it falls under something else?
The possibilities. Do we divide trust between registrants and consumers, like according to Nielsen? Or do we make a bucket for...
You mean registrants and end users?
Exactly, like we have it in the Nielsen structure.
Right. So we define consumer to include both in our terms of reference.
So we can't
use consumer, but we could use end user and registrant.
But then we have to rename the bucket, and we call it consumer trust, and we are fine. Okay? That was my comment. If you call it consumer trust, okay, we have both below. Great.
Yeah. but back to my question, which is, are there any other sub-issues here, whether it deals with, are there any other sub-issues here dealing with end user that we need to add?
And here I go back to the revision of the metrics on trust and the revision on the questions of trust of the Nielsen report, et cetera, that have been flowing, and we see it, and it moves, but, I mean, I don't know how long this group is going to work in this issue. Is it only for today, or are we going to continue? Because if we're going to continue, we have to go back and...
We're going to figure it out in an hour.
Yeah.
What?
We're going to figure it out in an hour.
Jamie's going to figure it out in an hour, but I think...
Then in terms... I think
we can maintain the flexibility if we think there are things that need to be added.
But that's what I said. What's your definition, Federal Trade Commission, of trust? What are the metrics on trust in the long metrics list? And what are the questions on trust in both Nielsen areas?
Well...
Just footnotes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, to me, what's important is that we want to consider how people behave. You know, what information they're willing to give over, and then what risk they are. You know, for what is the risk of harm? I mean, those to me are some of the important issues. Which I think DNS abuse gets at a little bit, not a little bit, it certainly gets at, but I think this issue of what is the public's behavior can give us some information on trust, and I also am interested in what risks are out there and whether those risks are more in the Nucci DLD space as compared to the legacies. So you just asked some of my perspectives.
So let me rephrase it so I'm sure I understand you. So in the case of users, would be giving my email, my address, and my credit card an expiration date? That is the and in the case of registrants, filling the whois in a truthful manner or not, because they're going to use it to cheat.
That's apples and oranges to me.
Well, that's why I'm separate. That's why we have two types of consumers.
Right.
That's why we have final users.
Who is this basically the same for new and existing
DLDs?
Exactly.
Right.
That was my next point.
If we go into who is, we will never get out of it.
No, but that was my next point. What's the difference between the old ones and the new ones?
As far as who is, there is no difference.
And about the users?
Well, there's only one thing that's different from the old
ones.
You have to verify. You have a verification.
Well, process. Not necessarily. It's the public's choice. And the legacy GTLDs, they're more familiar with. I mean, that's a speculation, but I assume they're more familiar with it and the behavior may be different.
So you think there's an obligation.
To verify something.
It's not verification. That if you are registering in a certain type of TLD from a highly regulated sector, that you have whatever credentials are necessary, you warrant as a registrant that you really are a doctor.
NGO, ONG.
Yeah. Yes? Yeah. It's pretty much the same, yes. It's the same kind of routine. The same kind of routine. You got to verify that.
Yes, it's called verification.
I was just going to chime in real quick. And with the consumer trust from the end user perspective, visiting the website, there's been some interesting stuff that's come out over the past year and a half from the Anti-Phishing Working Group, and I think a few other groups that have published reports. And so I know that .xyz. Perhaps I think in 2014 was really well known for having tons of abusive registrations, and so therefore that would create a whole trust about that entire TLD where an end user would never want to, if they knew that, would never want to perhaps navigate to .xyz. And so then I know that .xyz went out of their way to clean up their TLD because of the bad press they were getting. And so there could be all kinds of things like that where some TLDs are doing more than others, and that could definitely affect consumer trust about a certain TLD and in terms of even what policies they have in place within how many days they respond to a report about phishing or anything like that. I mean, there's just the list can go on and on, but there's all of those aspects with end users in addition to the other side of an end user registrant, whether or not they can trust that entity with their credit card information when they register a domain name and whatnot.
So maybe one
so how do you
point
deconstruct that? How do you deconstruct?
Well, maybe
consumer
behavior.
That's what I would say.
That maybe we add that.
I would say consumer behavior.
I'm reviewing
or
here.
Or end user behavior.
For me.
I said consumer behavior.
End user protecting the other threatening.
How about consumer slash end user?
That's all right.
Very good.
That's all right.
We can do that.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
At a really high level, I don't even know if this is possible, but don't we want to look at whether the rights protection mechanisms, I forget what they call them, the security mechanisms, DNS.
Does that look good to you in that bundle?
The obligation
right.
to protect
right.
the tech
in that bundle.
Right.
Yeah,
plus,
I don't feel like it's
all
the
things.
All right.
Are they doing
I'm waiting on your report.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, that also may go to timing. I'm not
right.
sure it's the right time, but I think it's a fair question to look at the impact of the PICs. And I think a corollary question is, are the GTLDs actually complying with
enforced.
The PICs?
I don't know how you get at that.
I don't know how you detect that, but I think that's
you can look at reporting of, you know, complaint
or whatever. I'm not so sure, really.
But I think part of what they would be interested in developing the rules for the next launch is whether, you know, whether the PICS plus the obligations from the applicant guidebook.
Can you just call them future TLDs? It's really neutral.
Impacted PICS and other obligations.
But that, I think, it's really the next step. That, I agree, is a change between the previous TLDs and then the new ones. Because the previous didn't have
it. They're not fixed, no.
That's right.
Okay, this is a change. This is a delta. This is a new bucket.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a new bucket.
I mean, it is a big load of work, for sure.
Exactly. Because this is one thing that has to be followed over time.
Mm-hmm.
Measured, discussed.
Right, and now then we would be able to set a baseline.
Right.
PICS and other safeguards, are there any others?
Yeah, there are. Okay. And also there are some contractual obligations.
New obligations.
They're all contractual.
They're all contractual, but new obligations in terms of trust?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Trust-building obligations.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point of the safeguards, but I mean, they're not all contractual because not all of them were endorsed by the board.
I'm talking about the ones we can measure.
Yes, the ones that are. Yeah.
Because this is the change. This is the new world.
And I think it should be noted that somebody on the GDB on Karen's team is actually looking into ways that we can measure what we're talking about with PICS, right? And if they're actually following up with that, you know, sort of different methodologies. And so she'll eventually have something that, you know, that you guys can maybe take a look at and see if, you know, it's feasible. Also looking at mission and purpose. I think that's what you're talking about in the applicant guidebook. So that is the question 18, I guess, of the applicant guidebook is the mission and purpose.
Because there was also a discussion that some old contracts were all TLDs lapsed and they had to sign new contracts and they accepted new conditions.
Oh, the RAA?
Into the renewal? Yes.
Yeah, the 2013 RAA.
Ah, that's the registrar's level. Okay.
And if the registrars wanted to sell new GTLD names, they had to sign the 2013 RAA.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Only if they got into the new...
Yes. Only
if they either got a new one or their old one expired.
Expired. Okay.
So what I suggested as sub-points are compliance, because compliance is going to have some information here, complaints regarding not adhering to the PICS. And then when we get at impact, I think the real question is, do they reduce harm? I don't know how you measure that, how you get at it, but it seems to me those are the questions.
You measure it by giving service if it increases trust, not if it reduces harm.
Well, then I think those are two different things.
That's why I come back to you, what's your definition of trust? Because there is this other, which is abuse, I mean, this negative view, we have to police abuse, and then there is the other, we have to enhance trust, you know?
Yeah.
And I still... I cannot do much with that.
Yeah, I think we should put our heads together to think about how we can look at that.
Yeah, I think trust maybe needs to be looked at as a relative concept. So if any of us go to a .com website, it could be a good website, it could be a bad website. We don't know, but either way, we're probably thinking about the fact that it ends in .com as something neutral. And so, therefore, we're wondering if it ends with .deals, .amazon, .xyz, does that change something one way or another?
That's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, to put it in more graphic terms, it might be the difference between at night walking down a well-lit street and walking down a dark, secluded street. Which route are you going to take? We're more inclined to walk.
Yeah, except there's a subtle difference, though, because we're talking about trust navigating to the website. We're not talking, I don't think, we're talking about trust of content on the website.
Hmm.
I think the way we've defined it in the terms of reference, it's not just navigating, it includes your experience on the website, which is different from content, but I think in the terms of reference, it's broader than just navigating. It's definitely broader than navigating.
Yeah, because it matters if you're more likely to be going to a phishing site or a site hosting malware or something, if it ends with a new TLD than if it ends in a .com. So that's something that's different than just did I successfully navigate, you know, from my own IP address to the IP to the destination IP address. So there is something more there. And so that's something. And for some of this stuff, and maybe we don't want to fully go down this road, but the way you would look at some of the stuff would be to get a hold of the zone files, compare what's in those zone files with what some of these third-party groups do in terms of identifying domain names that are, pointing to something abusive. And then you would see which registries and registrars maybe have more than others. And then from there, you could start analyzing what types of policies are in place and whatnot, or look at what types of complaints have been presented to ICANN about a specific registry or registrar or whatnot. So there are kind of different ways to slice it that way. But either way, I think it is important to know that to go beyond just navigating to something,
to know once we get there,
is there more an increased likelihood of something bad?
So that's fine. I guess my concern is, where do you draw the line, right? So phishing, malware, that makes a lot of sense. But if you go to a website that then, harvests your personal information, if that uses a domain name, is that something we're looking for?
I don't think so. I think we would just use what's already available to us in the either the RAA terms or the new TLD registrar accreditation agreement. We could just use something that ICANN has already provided and use that list, so that way it kind of creates a nice baseline for us, so we don't go down a slippery slope like you're alluding to, because you're right, we absolutely don't want to do that.
Yeah, this is Fabra. Maybe one suggestion the consumer trust is that include navigate and use as two bullet points. And then I'm looking here at the terms of reference. We use both. We use the users can
navigate and use
the domain, and then users can find and safely use the site.
Mm-hmm.
So we use both here. I think the focus should be navigate, where there's no borderline to draw.
Yes.
But then maybe there's things we can check on news. I was checking the Nielsen survey, and they say, for example, familiarity with new GTLDs and reporting site abuse. And then there might be things that use that we can use to measure consumer trust. But I think navigate should be more important.
I think that's a good way to think about it.
Is this guy calling?
I wanted to get back to one of the points you made, Jamie, about where do you draw the line in someone harvesting PII, for example. And I would say, okay, well, you might be walking down the slippery slope that way. That's the extent, for example, you're dealing with a highly regulated domain where it's called an anakinese.bank or .pharmacy. Let's say it's .mortgagebroker. And it turns out that the entity that's running the domain actually isn't making sure that they're a legitimate mortgage broker. And that, to me, is an issue we might want to grapple with, because then that there's an issue with the implication that you are a mortgage broker, so I can give you my information, except you're not.
Right, so that ties to the contract and to the PICs, because they're in the PICs. The people who are registered there are supposed to have the credentials to be however they hold themselves out. So there's a tie there to that. There isn't a tie to an extreme example showing first run movies on dot shoes or whatever.
What if there's a bad doctor and there wasn't any PicSpec associated with it? You're still setting a citation that in that you're not going to suspend that doctor or something like that. I mean, that may not be anybody's fault, right? I mean, I think that's the other thing to kind of separate is that it's not, I can't fault that that's the case, but is a consumer perception being created by these Uber-specific personal domains that are is then not met? Is that is probably worth something, question worth asking. Even if it wasn't something they committed to legally at the registry, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you could come up with a lot of examples like that, and to the extent that it's more closely tied to the contract and to what ICANN, what falls within ICANN's remit to quote unquote for compliance, I think it's going to be more meaningful.
That argument makes perfect sense, but if the very act of adding 1,500 domain names creates a decrease in consumer trust, then that is an Uber question that rises above contracts and things like that. In other words, does the very presence of this program have an impact on consumer trust? Is a tougher question to solve, certainly, but it might be worth asking.
So early on, we talked about relative abuse, right, or relative, and, I'm sure there's going to be lots of that stuff on these utilities, but is it qualitatively and quantitatively different? Hopefully we'll find it when we look at the impact effects, it'll be less in general. Maybe it will be more.
In the context of the picks.
But
it might prove that picks are a good way to mitigate what would otherwise be a trend. That would be an interesting outcome.
No, I think that's a really good point, because I think to use your word, at an Uber level, that's the really big issue we're grappling with is the fact that there are 900 and some odd new GTLDs out there. What effect has that had, with your dot doctors and your dot mortgage brokers and your dot accountants and your dot lawyers, some of which have adopted PICs and commitments about verification, and some of which haven't, because that actually was advice that wasn't embraced. That was advice from the GAC that wasn't embraced by the board.
Yep.
I just thought, by any case, there were any high-level deliverables kind of questions that you had that sounds like you guys would agree.
So just to make sure I understand what our task is for the next more minutes, we're coming up with at least a preliminary list of buckets for us to be thinking about as we look at the specific issues that we're going to look at.
Yeah, I think with the high-level deliverables back to the group is identifying your chair, which you've done, creating a more sophisticated version of the brainstorming exercise, which you appear to be doing, thinking in terms of setting some deadline maybe by which you'll explore what sources are available to you and what additional sources you might want. That's something we want to have done earlier. Rather than later, Margie shared with us that the current fiscal year 16 budget for outside work for the entire team, so that's through the into the summer basically, is about $250,000, and I think Karen has another $150,000. So you could say we have got four to spend in between now and midsummer, and then it enters a new fiscal year. And if we have recommendations for what that budget should look like, that has to happen sooner rather than later based on the budget position we're in. So for reasons of giving researchers time to conduct studies and budgets for them, prioritizing in your work plan, determining what additional research you think is necessary should be high in your list of priorities.
That does not include Nielsen or analysis.
It does not include Nielsen or analysis, and it doesn't include travel and things like that. So those are that $400,000 for the whole team is just for outside professional services. That's what's budgeted today. I mean, I wouldn't try to work backwards from a budget.
No.
Right? You want to try to work from your wish list, and then we'll fight about the budget. But that's kind of a ballpark. But that's probably the amount of money at the very minimum that got spent for one of those studies. And so studies like the Who Is study or something is, twice that, right? So, they can be expensive, but it just depends on what you're doing. You're trying to get data that already exists, but it costs money, or are you actually getting primary research done?
How much is the Nielsen contract and how much is the analysis?
That's not public information.
Okay.
So it's part of a contracting process. I mean, the numbers that got thrown out by the IAG CPT when proposed to the board was in the 500 to 750 range, no for each of them. And so what they actually negotiated down to as the base of the contracting process and things like that, none of us have transparency to. But remember, those were two big studies, the Nielsen Global Study. I mean, so they're gonna run the gamut. So that's the high end, and on the other end is licensing data that already exists, for example, that you have to pay for, right? And somewhere in the middle is getting a smaller primary research
program like that. Small data.
When do we do back in the room at 4?
Due to start up again at 4, starting a break around 3:45.
Okay, so we're already...
We're going to do one.
You're
into our
break
now, so thanks.
I apologize. I didn't want you to be held up by anything, so that's probably enough for deliverables.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
To
yeah. Yeah. No,
we're
good.
3:45 is the scheduled break, and 4 is wrap up. And probably presentations. I think we're going to look at. Right.
So anyway,
you.
Can we go to look at these categories and
yeah,
see whether or not we.
Yeah,
we
so
think there's an additional data we
right.
can get now that we hear that we have
well,
some
before we,
resources.
Before we go to additional data, since we do actually, we have like almost nearly
half
an hour, so it's only 10 of 3 now, if my
yeah.
watch is correct.
Yeah.
So
right.
I was like an hour ahead.
I was too.
We can have plenty of time.
We can play some beach volleyball, though.
Right. So are there any other issues or... Or are there any other issues we want to add, or are there any other sub-points we want to add? And this is not going to be like a final list. I think we should go back and think about this, and
yeah.
then
yeah.
we'll set a deadline for folks to give feedback on this list.
I think that's a suggestion. So we have navigate and using consumer trust, but I think they actually go in below the consumer end and user behavior, because we're not using for registrants.
So maybe we can put consumer and end user behavior up to the top and put navigate and use underneath.
Yeah. And I'm afraid of the use one because it can grow
big.
Yeah.
Yeah. So navigate and use are subsets of consumer and user behavior.
Yeah.
And then there's one topic we can discuss it, but it's in the news and survey and somehow we discuss
yeah.
it in the rest of the day, which is purchase restrictions. If you want to discuss these or not.
When you say purchase restrictions, tell me what you mean. Do you mean the highly regulated domains or something
yes.
else?
So I think use, maybe it should be what's up from the, I don't know if it's from the terms of reference or the word, but safety of use?
We have
safe use.
The one is trust in the consistency of the name resolution. 2, confidence by internet users that they can safely navigate the domain name without falling victims of DNS abuse. Confidence that internet users can find and safely use the site they intend to search, to reach. Confidence TLD registry operators fulfilling the registry stated purpose. Confidence by a registrant in a domain registration process and life cycle. These are the 5 definitions we include.
So do we want to track those
safety
concepts?
Of use. Yeah, we can do that too.
Yeah. But I'm not sure how they fill in the pockets. So some of them are trademark, not only trademark. It's somehow related to the PICs, but not exactly. Or not, but just one
topic. No, it's a fair point. Can you read that list one more time? Look,
yeah.
Actually, let me look over your shoulder, too.
You want to project, maybe?
Sure.
It's in the sole reference, consumer trust, page 4. Better than the prize.
Terms of reference.
Page 4.
Good?
Yep.
this was changed. This is a prior verse. We changed this.
We changed number 3 to consumers.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. This is actually the prior version.
We did some changes to it.
The last version is only printed in your hands, Laureen.
It's only
printed. You were holding the last version.
Oh, Elisa is here. What?
Do
you have a new one?
No, so we don't have the updated one.
The updated terms of reference from the discussions yesterday.
That's great. So that concept of safety is in there, and that's what I'm hearing you say. Maybe we're not capturing. Yeah. Can we go back to the?
We're not capturing in the definition.
It's a
mushy word like trust.
Yeah, it's a mushy word like trust. It's a sense of being. How you measure that?
Yeah. Then I have the other question in mind, is that if we could generate research about that, how I find the information. And most of the information that is there is not easy to measure.
Well, that's why I wanted to find out if we see anything that we could get more and better data on.
Yeah.
That's my big thing. No, which one of those things you think we could get more definitive data on? Because I really think that we should endeavor to make any pronouncements that are data-driven, that we can actually stand up, have some data we can back it up with whatever we say. And to do that, you start with stuff that you can actually collect credible data on.
Well, right. But at this point, some of these things we may find that there's data, and some of them we may find there isn't data.
I understand that. I'm just saying that let's try to make more of those that we have data on, top
or
of line.
Or think about what data we what can data ask
we
for.
Need
we
to
have
ask
a little
for.
Bit of a budget here.
And we have a budget. This is the point I was getting to. So look at those that we think we have data on. Look at those that we think there might be data for. But we might not have those, and then we have a budget. We can ask somebody, what is it we need here, and could you find it, and how much will it cost?
And barring that, if you can't get that, it's an exercise in determining adequate proxies for some of these measures, mm-hmm. I think.
So that I can kind of follow in the...
Adequate proxies. Now, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, something like just a little preview is that, you know, we've been looking at sick who is, and how do you measure whether sick who is like an effective safeguard in terms of DNS abuse? It's very difficult. One of the things we propose is accuracy. There's an accuracy reporting system out there. Is accuracy in some way a proxy for effectiveness? Can we make an argument for that? And a lot of people say no, okay, it's not. But it's you can make sort of a cogent argument. And then barring that, if you can't find a good proxy for something, is qualitative feedback from end users something you can fall on? If there's no data set you can find, can you go to, you know, people who've used, you know, the centralized zone data service? Has that been helpful? Is it, you know, I mean, these are kinds of things that might be backups for you guys if you can't. Because one of the things I've encountered is that it can be hard to find data that's fulfilling or satisfying for what you want to measure, I think. So it'll be a challenge.
Yeah.
That's where I go back. Okay, let's look at the metrics chapter on trust.
You mean from the Nielsen review?
No, from the AIGT.
AIGT. Yes.
They were
that list. That list that we just looked at.
Do we have it somewhere? I have it printed in my bag out there. I can bring it.
Get it?
Yes.
You.
I can tell you which ones we're collecting, which ones we're not.
In the annex, they rearranged the 66 by...
Yep.
And the different conditions, right.
Parts in the annex.
Yes, that annex has them by conditional, so they're conditional there. It's a good start.
Can you show them and look at them in the screen?
Yeah. So you have their annex?
I do.
Okay.
Can you just...
Sure, you have just have to move there.
Can we? Oh, no, I can do it remotely.
You can do better
can
than...
Can you disconnect?
Oh.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, from AirPlay? Or?
Yeah, disconnect from AirPlay.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And there we are, we have
We need code.
Now we can use ours.
Now she tells me.
They're funny.
We're actually going to watch a movie. All right, so here is the GoPro. Let me...
Because if they aren't available, they have to be produced.
Exactly. Yeah, so we, so I, I've been going by, and I think a lot of people in the GDD team. This is the annex. Check.
So this is the main.
This is the main, yeah, but they have the.
They have it in the annex. Look in the annex.
Let's go into the.
And they started doing some work in the annex there that made it a little bit easier to think about.
You mean these? Or
yeah, the one that says trust, the one, go back.
Oh.
You see that? Yeah. Nope. So you see all the trust ones there?
Yes, but in the annex we haven't organized by.
I think a little bit further down.
Okay, annex one.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all the ones that says trust. We can
the first two are hard data.
Yeah, so 1.1 to 1.3, but those are, we're not able to publish those. We're not able to publish those.
I understand that.
SLI.
Yeah,
but
let's go down a little bit.
You're not able to publish them, but you can create an index of all of them and report. I mean, what's not... what secret is the single...
Not the compiled index.
It could be aggregate.
Yes, it could be aggregate, so you lose track of the... So the first three are hard data. Survey of perceived consumer trust in the DNS.
Well, that's the Nielsen survey.
Yeah. There we go to the Nielsen questions.
Uptime for
5.5, uptime for registered services such as Whois, contact info, and complaints. Is there some research on Whois? I think there are some reports on Whois.
Yeah.
That can be just done against new GTLDs. There is a lot of crap.
Yeah, but I don't think we can pull out new GTLD ones from those reports I've seen.
No, I mean, the recommendation is keep doing them and include the new GTLDs.
Oh, yeah.
1.6, relative incidence of breach notices easier to register operators. That's in the report that was presented this morning? No.
Yeah, Maggie had some of those.
Maggie
had some.
Compliance report?
Yeah.
Relative incidence of other breach notices, relative incidence of registry and registers, general complaints submitted to ICANN. Internic system. What's that?
I think that's just our compliance intake system.
And some of these in this annex are actually just their original proposed metrics, and
right,
there are some that have
dropped out. Where are the current metrics?
The current metrics. Okay, so the current metrics that we're collecting.
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's going to be what we have.
Got it. Yeah. So I'll just pull up the page here.
Can we just see how long the list is? Just go to a new page.
Nope.
Can you scroll slowly and see how many trust metrics we have? 10.
I know. Okay.
Just the final number. 11, 12, 13, 18, 20, 21, Okay, there we go. 22 mm-hmm. out of 66. So a good third.
Is that how it's organized? No. Is all the trust ones are up front, or are they interspersed?
No, there's some more down. There's some more down. It's about 30.
Ever.
I did a quick.
It's about 30? No, yeah. I saw 22 only.
I think, well, when I look, I thought I quick
count.
How long
were you wearing, man?
I just kind of do 5, 10, 15, 20, 30.
3, 4 months.
I also do it that way because then I get relative.
20, 22 counts.
I put a relative thing in my head. No, there's others there.
Choice, there's another list. Okay, 22. Now we can go to the other. Thank you. Our data. Quantitative comparison
okay.
of the fourth question.
So actually, I have, we're here, just 43 ones that have been categorized as trust. Okay.
I knew there was
and
more.
These are the existing ones.
I
yeah, these are ones I'm either collecting.
I said about 30 because I looked at the list and then just did a quick eye scan. And thought it's about 30 because it was like spilling on two pages.
Drew, are you able to see this?
Drew?
No, he's not in the Adobe room.
Okay. No, I can't see it. Sorry.
So what we're looking at are the current metrics that ICANN is collecting data on, which include trust issues, among the competition issues and
the choice
issues.
I can do is I'll show this. This is actually probably easier to follow. This is I've just
and that was what she showed this morning.
Yeah. So this is everything that's published that has to do with trust. So we tried to because trust, if you haven't read the IAGCCT report, you don't really trust, competition and choice doesn't really mean as much to you. So we tried to make this a little bit more accessible. This is what we're reporting on. So you're seeing some that have to do with compliance, some notices of breach. These are all compliant.
And these are just for the new GTLDs.
No, this is all. This is
for everything.
For everything. So these are, we bring these in from reports that are published by compliance. So compliance has a dashboard and they do what Maggie was saying every month. They have an overview of complaints, et cetera. They also have a yearly report. And then, so that's where the detail is. What I try to do for a lot of this is sort of aggregate, like you're talking about, because some things, but within their reports, there's a lot more detail. And I've linked to their dashboards and reports.
And if we wanted to compare the new GTLDs to the legacy GTLDs, could we do that with
yep.
that data?
So yeah. What they don't collect, I could probably see if they have the ability to sort of parse out new Gs versus legacy. That's why we tried to have a baseline for all of these, for instance, inaccurate, invalid, or
2012.
Right, so you have that 2012 to 2013,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can
mm-hmm.
see, are the new Gs resulting? I mean, obviously, they're going to be probably more with complaints because there are more Gs, GTLDs. And that's sort of where the issue, though, becomes, right? Is it because of the new GTLDs, or is it just because there's a larger number of GTLDs
mm-hmm.
in the root, definitely?
Larger pool to look at.
Yeah, I would say that one of the tests we should do is just get a
before and after.
Before if you do it in-house, fine. If you're not, it might be a way to use the money to,
yeah.
okay.
to check it.
So in terms of one of the things we need, it would be divide compliance stats into new Gs and legacies.
And that would be something to probably talk with the Maggie's team about,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know how they collect these compliance
right.
data. But and the same thing goes for 4.5 and 8.1. I just do the aggregate amount of complaints received by ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that compliance has very detailed
right.
accounts. And so that's also something that, if need be, that they can get specifically for 4.5 and 8.1, I know those are available.
Well, and they post them on the compliance website.
They post in the aggregate.
And there's some nice detail in terms of in terms of data abuse percentages overall.
Yeah, so they have very good statistics. Yeah. So my question is if we're able to get it divided so we can actually see the comparison.
Mm-hmm. And these are two sort of, I mean, these go a little bit because this is complaints that are regarding improper use and then complaints about confusion or misunderstanding. And so I think there are more subcategories that you can make in mm-hmm. the total.
Yeah. Can you go to the 7.1 about the policies? I think this might be another one we should look at.
So we want to do
7.1.
Break it out in the compliance.
Yeah, there.
Yeah.
Break it out between new details and legacy compliance.
Which privacy policy is clearly easily accessible by end users. And breaking down.
This is a big, and what I've tried to do is we have a system where the way that we can collect it is pretty. I combine 7.1 to 7.3 together so that the ability to look at them. So this is the baseline because it was so we went through every registry's website and then linked to the privacy policy or the different policies. We have a lot more registries, right? So, you know, would that be something that you were thinking that if you want for each individual registry that you could get somebody to go through or write a script to go through?
That's interesting.
It might be related to consumer trust, the way that you can see what kind of information you can have access to, and might be a good metric.
Or how information is shared. That's always a big issue.
We don't have enough current sub-teams, but I think we could use in consumer trust the privacy.
Well, that's certainly
not
a big
privacy
issue.
As privacy. We need
but privacy policies.
Privacy policies.
Or about what?
Well, what... Anna was telling us is that there's a whole metric that's being collected on privacy policies and how easy they are to access, and it sounds like also content.
Allocation, and there's something...
Privacy policies of the GTLDs.
Of the registry, yeah.
Right.
And the question is, it's whether or not it is easily accessible. So it's not saying, do they have it? Is it easily accessible?
Somebody can look at it fine, real quick.
Two scenarios here. The TLDs are just horrible in terms of...
What would that tell us? Is that a trust...
the legacy.
The trustworthiness?
Better than generic.
Trustworthiness? So it's a trustworthiness issue.
Yes, I think it is. Yeah. If I can't even figure out how my information is going to be treated, that affects my willingness in certain cases, to deal with it. I just want to tell the record that's
a trustworthiness.
Or transparency.
So should we add that?
I would add it. Privacy as a one.
Privacy policy. Privacy.
If you have brownie points.
Oh.
All right.
Okay.
You got lots of brownie points.
We need to run more.
Alice,
privacy policy.
Can we add privacy policy for consumer trust?
Yeah.
In its own
thing.
Registry policy.
Yeah.
Hey, there are only five. 1, 2, 3.
I donate mine.
So how many do you have there?
Eve.
We have 17 published. 17 metrics published. Yeah.
Out of your 45 or Cosmos 30 or the AIG 20.
And this is all available on the CCRT metrics page?
For free. We don't have to pay for that. Like these brownies?
Where those come from?
Alice bought them.
Alice just baked them.
Thank you for putting them far away from me.
She went to...
No. You can come behind me.
Go ahead.
That was easy, Jamie. We can walk back to the
temptation. Heal the temptation. He yielded.
We can walk back.
The 4.4
back again.
Yeah.
Percentage of non-resolving domains, it might relate to navigating.
4.4. On here?
Mm.
Percentage of non-resolving.
No, all of these are going to have a file an Excel file that includes every TLD. The problem is that in less than a week, I can give you an entire month, an extra month, because we can't publish the last 3 months due to privacy issues. So I'm waiting for a few days instead of keeping. But anyways, usually there's a file that it contains every single TLD and a percentage as well.
So the name is...
Well, that certainly goes to navigate.
Yeah.
That's about navigation.
It can be, it's a long shot, but it can be trademark issues in a way that for the fancy registration...
They registered, but they don't intend to put up a website.
The park domain.
The park.
Today, for one of the brands in Brazil, the global, mm-hmm. not global, and was exactly like that. They had one registered. It's a clear defensive. It might be a non-resolving.
So it would be a count that we put in navigate.
Navigate, but
as well as
when we check and we group them according to what kind of generic they are, we might have business models correlation. So community brands,
brand protection.
Yeah, we may see that.
So it's brand protection.
I think the
navigate on brand protection and brand protection.
So does not resolve.
And then we do have the rights protection mechanisms as per se. Which would be good to split to segregate.
Yeah, and this might be something too that the group also could do is if they wanted to send, to contact a URS provider directly and see if they have any more data that's not publicly available, because everything
that's
not on the publicly available databases, so maybe there's more data, more specific, case-specific data or region-specific data that you want to look at things like that.
So we have about a half hour more. So should we focus? Should we focus a little bit on what information we might want to fund? This first one is really we're going to see if compliance can
winnow that out for us.
Yeah,
without additional cost.
Is there additional? Is there additional information we might want to think about gathering?
We have to see at Nielsen and the other one. Maybe we don't need anymore. We don't have to spend the money. I mean,
No. I just don't just think.
Jamie's and pension fund. I mean.
I know Jamie would have
his pension
fund.
Yeah. $2.
Keep the internet free and open, Jamie.
Drew, are there things that you can think of that we might want to take a look at, whether it's something that exists already or something we might want to consider thinking about? Did we lose you? Drew, are you on mute?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. Yes. Sorry, I'm home with a newborn, so I'm getting very ADD. But I completely missed the last thing said.
Oh, so I was just asking you, I'm sorry, we're intruding on your new daddy time.
I'm sorry. In Morocco, I will be in Morocco, and I will be much better rested then, so I'll be much more engaged.
What I was asking is, do you think that there are, my first question was, are there existing things you think we should be taking a look at that relate to issues of consumer trust, or maybe the related issue of DNS abuse? Or conversely, do you think that there are things we should be looking into getting more information on, whether it's a study or going to certain sources to get information? Because now's the time where there are funds available, and if we're going to ask for something, better to do it sooner rather than later.
Right, yeah. Definitely need to think more about specifically what we would want, but yes, I think absolutely. I think we definitely would want more data about DNS abuse specifically. So we would want to know the number of complaints coming into the registries themselves, perhaps, maybe about the behavior of registrars even, I don't know. And then we would want to certainly, if we're all in agreement, we want to look at, you know, how much more abusive one TLD could be over another once we agree on which categories we're going to use for that, then maybe we would want access to zone files to analyze just so we can make that comparative judgment if there are trust issues, and then if are those trust issues valid? Is there an actual correlation between a new TLD and likelihood that it could be abusive or whatnot? And I would think that that data would be useful, too, in whatever we do with privacy as we look at different privacy policies to see if perhaps if there are trust issues with new TLDs that don't have privacy policies in place or don't have as strong of privacy policies, maybe there's also other issues associated with them. I don't know, but I'd have to think more about what other types of data sets we would want, but I think that would be a good use of funds.
So what I heard is complaints to registries, maybe number of complaints to registrars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this assumes that they'd be willing to share this information with us, because that's separate and apart from what I can receive. Those are totally different buckets.
Right.
And then I heard you talk about rootstone files, and that got too technical for my little brain. But I know you can explain it.
No, but you got all you can parse. You just need maybe somebody to write an algorithm to do that for you.
Yeah, those would be simple to analyze. If we got those, and my thought with that is, and maybe we wouldn't even do it for, you know, every TLD. Maybe we'd do a subset. Maybe we'd do only, you know, only new TLDs that have X number of registrations or something. And basically, we would have to identify then an entity like APWG or Spam House or some group whose data we would use to query that off of to see if there is a correlation between domain names known to be associated with maliciousness and the, you know, percentage of TLDs or percentage of domain names in a certain TLD. So that's how we would use those zone files. And then what I'm thinking is if that was useful data and we were able to draw any sort of conclusion, maybe that's sort of one of the lenses through which we're looking at other potential consumer trust issues, such as privacy as it relates to privacy policies in place, DNS abuse in terms of whether or not there are complaints going unanswered, whether it's complaints going unanswered at the ICANN level, complaints going unanswered at the registrar or registry level, or whatnot. Those are just some thoughts about that.
I lost you at any correlation between domain names associated with abuse and what else? That's where I'm getting confused.
You're referring to when I was explaining how we would use zone file data?
Right. Any correlation between domain names associated with abuse and what?
And then we could look at the TLD itself, so then we would know the registry, and then we could look at perhaps even the registrars, depending on how detailed data we get, as it would all be tagged. And so then we could find out, and we would definitely have to take some sort of, subset to really do it because of the amount of time it would take to perhaps do the really meaningful substantive analysis of this. But we could then look at, you know, whether or not maybe there's certain new TLDs that are not, where the registries are not doing enough about abuse complaints they're getting, or maybe they're not doing enough about verifying which registrars they do business with, and those registrars don't have strong policies in place and therefore are more likely to allow registrations that are then used for malicious purposes. You can draw a lot of correlations if you can get that data and look at those things that would, in my opinion, directly relate to consumer trust with new TLD.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds very interesting, although I'm not exactly sure I'm still understanding all the nuances. And maybe it's worth, maybe would you mind like drafting like maybe just a paragraph so explaining it at the kindergarten level, at least for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize.
No. It's not you, Drew. It's definitely it's me. But I'm thinking at least I would benefit from seeing it in black and white. So, and I think maybe the group would then be able to assess it.
For sure. Yeah, I can definitely do that. Yep.
Great. So, are there any other buckets of data that we're interested in. I mean, I personally would be interested, at least for the highly regulated GTLDs, in knowing which ones actually have some sort of verification process that they engage in. And maybe it's two questions. One, is there a public interest commitment they have that, you know, that they themselves have signed up for in their contract? And then two, even if it isn't in their contract, is there some sort of verification they do just as part of their procedures? And I guess that would be a sort of survey. You know, we'd have to think about what would make sense to choose. But the highly regulated sectors do, you know, is a narrow subset. So, some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think the highly regulated sectors are one of the more interesting aspects of these new TLDs because part of the purported purpose is to create trust so that, you know, if you go to that pharmacy at the pharmacy and whatnot. So I think that would be worthwhile exploring and getting that data.
Have they been delegated? Weren't there some delays with these highly regulated?
Not with the highly regulated strains themselves. Some were delegated early on. Some have yet to be delegated.
Oh, okay.
There's two things, right? There's some strains where, like Dot Bank, where the applicant voluntarily agreed or volunteered to do certain things. To verify or validate or qualify their registrar. So Dot Bank would only allow commercially regulated or, you know, whatever, regulated financial institutions. There are others which are associated with highly regulated sectors where they have to comply with an additional in the PEG itself. That go above and beyond someone who's not, you know, the first string that's like that sport or whatever, and it's not highly sensitive.
Okay, thank you.
So I can take a look at that about the highly regulated sector domains and maybe make some suggestions about ones we can take a look at because the GAC actually has. And so there are lots of charts that actually separate those out. So that might be interesting. Are there other thoughts about any other information we want me to take a look at?
I'm checking the websites of registrants to see if there is any idea that we could do, like, look at a privacy policy, but I'm not finding anything that is data we could
use. You're looking at legacy ones, or?
I went to GoDaddy, now I'm named Cheap, and then I'm just seeing if they have any
obligations?
Or any public information that we could research and say, look, this amount has, this amount doesn't have, like the privacy disclosure policy. Just to have some brainstorm ideas of data that
we
could use.
We also could ask.
Yeah.
I mean, and see. Just because it's not on their website doesn't mean that they don't have it. Well,
we have to formulate the question beforehand enough for that.
Say it again.
I am fearing that for those kinds of queries, you would have to formulate a question so open-ended that it probably will get immediate pushback. Because they will know, what do you want to know this for? Hey.
Well, we can think about it. Just because we get pushback doesn't mean we shouldn't.
I'm
being realistic.
Not going to stop me. Anyway.
So, see, Alice is here taking notes, but I'm wondering if we can capture this also into the what else category.
Okay.
If
we could divide the combined
data.
Between
compliance.
Legacy and new ETLDs, and we need number of complaints to registries, number of complaints to registrars.
I think actually it's going to be on the what else do we. It's going to be in the other.
What else?
What else do we need?
Yeah, which is or / data.
And another line after divide.
It's micromanagement.
Number of complaints to registries.
Right, if we can go to the registries and registrars and get information on their number of complaints. And this is Drew's going to, whatever you put down for this, put Drew in parentheses afterwards. but if there's a correlation between between domain names associated with abuse and TLDs and registrars.
Do you mean second-level domain names?
Yes. Chime in here, Drew, because I'm probably master.
Sorry. Okay, yeah, so... So what I was thinking is perhaps we could figure out how we'll identify them, but we'll identify new TLDs that have X number of registrations and then get a hold of their zone files and then check the domain names, their registrations. And we'd have to, of course, pick a period of time, and then we'd see what percentage of those have been associated with DNS abuse. Based off of, a database provided by an outside entity, such as Spam House, or something. And so then we would, from that, be able to identify whether or not, new TLDs were any more likely than other TLDs to have DNS abuse. And if so, we could even maybe break it down by registrar selling these new TLDs. And then, from there, maybe I think that data could fit into other things we're looking at, such as the privacy policies, maybe the abuse policies and whatnot of these TLDs to kind of see how that's all related together, and then we could draw some conclusions about consumer trust.
I think that's
right. That's the concept. Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to put down the method.
I think you got it, the essence of it.
True.
Elaborate.
And I can do a write up and email everyone. Do you want me to email you guys now or later or what?
Whatever's good for you, because this is a placeholder.
Okay, yeah. So that'll be a placeholder, and then will you need that? And then when you guys return to the other room, or are we going to now be a group that's going to, like beyond today? Are we now officially a group?
We're going to be a group. This is going to be a working subgroup.
Okay, perfect. Great.
Bless you. And then, Jamie, one more highly regulated sector domain.
So do you want to? What do you want to do?
We want to look at whether there has been either voluntary or mandated verification, validation, screening efforts.
So we know that there are.
Well, we know that there are some voluntary ones.
Right. There are some voluntary ones.
And there are some mandated.
But so what? Are you trying to show that there's less? Is there less abuse than those?
I think that would be one of
lower rate of abuse.
Is there a correlation between the existence of a verification or screening requirement and a lower level of abuse?
So impact of
yeah, I think that's really good to look at.
Okay.
And I was involved in a study a year ago through my organization, the Secure Domain Foundation, and we looked at that a bit, just using survey methods, and we're able to draw some conclusions about whether or not those who were proactive and actually did something on the front end reaped benefits by having less abuse complaints on the back end. So I think.
So how are you going to do the comparison? Because you're not going to have like a dot bank with and a dot bank without.
What you would do is you'd look at registrar selling dot bank, and you would see if some have, you know, use those methods and some don't, perhaps, because of the different ways in which the ICANN requirements can be interpreted.
Well, but it falls on the registry ultimately to.
But for the registry itself, you're right. I mean, because then it could be apples and oranges.
My understanding from some research has been done already that ICANN has no right to registrar this kind of information from registrars. So it may be hard to get that. I mean, I think it'd be interesting to look at like dot bank versus, I don't know if there's like a dot finance or.
That's what I was thinking. Is there some similar?
That's where we could create pools of categories and I think that's a great idea.
Like big enough, mm-hmm. You know, mandatory, you know, voluntary versus, you know, sort of you're fine as long as you're not, and kind of, you know, if you hold yourself out as a lawyer, you have to have all those credentials.
So that's another, you know, to be defined.
Yeah. 5 minutes to go.
Yeah. So maybe let's set some, I think we're all going to have to look at this and decide if there are things we need to flesh out, if there are things we're missing. So why don't we set as a deadline, first of all, how do we circulate this?
Send it by email?
Thank you, Jamie. That's enormously helpful. How does this get from the screen into our little hands? Can you send it to
yes,
us?
Yes, of course.
Great.
Are we sending Word documents, or are we opening Workspaces?
Well, you'll speak to Jonathan about that, because I have no idea. For now, we're going to stick with email.
No, it's not email. I don't mind the email.
Is it Word?
No, it's not the word. It's that we're fixing a piece of paper and we have to print it out or start drafting on it, and somebody makes one change and the other one makes another, and then we have three versions, and
right.
Then we meet, we never find the latest version, and
It's cumbersome, but that's where we are right now.
We are a lowly subgroup, so.
But I will adopt whatever fine solution Jonathan is able to identify. But for now, it's going to be lowly email. So we'll circulate this, and could folks take a look at this and maybe circulate comments back to the group by. What's reasonable? Wednesday? Would Wednesday be reasonable? Would Thursday be reasonable?
No. I'm leaving early to I make a stopover. I'm leaving Tuesday to market.
What's reasonable?
Friday next week. So
Friday?
I'm in Marrakesh.
Could you do it any sooner than Friday?
I can.
How about Thursday? I'll compromise. Okay, next Thursday. By next Thursday.
23:59.
Whatever time you want to pick. By next Thursday at the close of your business day. How about that? Circulate back to the group comments, and then we can... maybe in Marrakesh, maybe we can find a time to meet as a subgroup on the margins of Marrakesh. I'll send around some proposed time. Every minute is
we have 2 days.
Let me check with Jonathan about whether any of that time is going to be devoted to subgroup work. If it is, we don't need to add any. If it isn't, we may need to add. So I don't know.
Wow.
I'm just going to ask.
Don't we have 18 months? I mean...
What?
Don't we have 18 months?
No.
No.
Why are you making it longer?
December
31st.
He loves us. He wants to spend time with all of us.
No, I heard that a year was not realistic.
It was not realistic.
It's unrealistic from day one. But
anyway, I will check on that, seeing your widened eyes in reaction to extra time.
I'm sacrificing 2 days of my Marrakesh time to be in.
We're all sacrificing. Anyway, we'll ask, because if it's already in the schedule, then we don't need to add to the schedule. I have no interest in adding if we don't need to. So let's ask that. Are there any other questions we want to ask Jonathan when we get back to the big group? No? Any other thoughts before we draw to a close?
Maybe just one thought is that we have the table, the group and some sets, and maybe when we share the document to commit, we can create another column with what kind of data we might be collecting.
That's a great idea.
So we can cross-connect.
We can make a table.
Cross-connect.
We're about to finish here. So
what kind of topic we highlighted, but
we have no clue
what
kind of
data we can work on.
I think that's a great idea.
That's a good idea.
It's a really good idea. Yes, I like it.
Good. Okay, so this is. I just want to say for the record that I'm releasing you 2 minutes early for the break.
Put the chat up on your side.
All right, it's just I got 2 minutes added to my
best chair.
Pocket, right.
That's right. Plus.
Let's go to the mall.
All right.
Bye,
Brian.
Three.
Look out for the DNS abuse report.
No. You send it personally to us.
Personally?
Okay. Yes.
I think it's a very easy email.
Thank you. We'll take you from the other room now. Thank you.
But it's a lot. I think. I had to find my
own.
Okay, we're good.
I butchered your code.